wish him well. We wish him well. We will also ask that the committee secretary just make sure that we send him our well wishes from committee side. Members, before we start the committee meeting, I think it's important that we just reflect. While we are going to talk today about the green paper, and I will get to that point now, that we reflect on some reports that we saw in the media over the past few days, unfortunately, and specifically those around five police officers in the Western Cape and in Gauteng who have been arrested, accused of raping women. Some of them did so using police vehicles, and I think as a committee we need to condemn this in the strongest possible terms. I think that's part of what we want to look at in Green Paper as well, is address this issue of criminality that we find within the police. It is completely and utterly unacceptable that we have people who are supposed to be protecting the most vulnerable, who are the ones then in the end who abuse that trust and rape women. I also am very interested to find out how is it possible with AVL systems in the vehicles that no station commander at any point picked up that this vehicle is standing somewhere where it shouldn't be standing. And it raises questions about the effective use of the AVL as well. What is more worrisome even is the fact that one of these police officers that got arrested in my constituency, and he's accused of raping children. He appeared in court for one rape of one victim, and now I hear that there are a few more victims that have come forward, all of their children. And we call on such management to take serious actions against these officers. It's not good enough to just suspend them. In my mind, let's deal with the labour issues afterwards, but they should be fired. And if you suspend them, it should at least be without pay as well. We can't have this free-for-all within the South African Police Service. Members, today we have arranged this meeting to discuss the Green Paper. Now, I want to make it clear to members that the Green Paper is work in progress. It's not a final product. It's actually still in the process of public participation and public input. The Secretariat has been going around the country having meetings with various interest groups, and I would ask them also to reflect, just give us a short rundown of those meetings that you did have. Not the detail, but just where you have had meetings and what you're still planning in terms of the Green Paper process. We thought it's important that as a serious stakeholder, that the committee be given an opportunity to input in the Green Paper. So we're not just critiquing the Green Paper, we want members to input in the Green Paper so that the things that we believe should be in there are reflected in there. So that today's meeting, the purpose of that is for you to have that opportunity to raise the issues that you believe are lacking in the Green Paper that should be there. Obviously, like with any consultation process, everything that we say might not be in the final product, but it is our consultative opportunity with the Secretariat in terms of that. Honourable Bloor?
Chairperson, before you go to the items, can we not support you on this policy that you are saying? Because it's very important that as a committee we support you. It's not just yourself, but as a committee, I don't know how the other my colleagues feel about it, but I really understand why you are saying it. Because if people are getting suspended without pay or with pay or whatever, we are giving them leave to stay at home and then draw their salaries and so on when they have done the wrong thing, especially to the vulnerable people and so on and so forth. I think I understand where you're coming from, and I thought that maybe if we support your stand on that, we can deal with the labor relation issues afterwards, but we have to be very strong to the members of the police, but especially the people who are supposed to protect people. Thank you.
Any other member who wants to comment on that? Honorable George?
Well, Madam Chair, I can only say I support what Bob Woodruff is saying. I think it's important that we deal with this matter. Another matter which I raised with you, Madam Chair, is the issue of the killing of the police. I think it's becoming a serious matter of concern. Like you said, it needs to be addressed with all the facts presented to us.
Madam Chair, I also support your statement.
Thank you, Chair. The question that leaps to my mind when I see SAT members utilising SAT firearms, SAT vehicles to go and do crime is, number one, how did they get into the SAT in the first place? I think that's a very serious question that we have to ask ourselves. Are we doing psychometric testing? Has it fallen by the wayside? And if we're doing it, we're still getting them in there. We better review what tests they're undergoing, because they should never have been allowed one foot inside a police academy if they have tendency to do crime. So it's a huge concern. You know, for us to try and bolster the national opinion of the SAPs, and you try and do it, and every time I say, you know, there are police officers who will take a bullet for you, and they open the paper and they read that, it's an almost impossible task, because every time we... You know, they're not going to go over Marikana in a hurry, or Midamsia, or Katane, and now we read this. And every time we attempt to say there are good cops, it takes one bad cop and the rest are trash. And really, it's a hugely, hugely serious problem.
Sabine?
Oh, sorry, you did Honourable Funeral, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I fully support what has been said, but I really do have a problem in this sense. You know, we always say, yes, steps must be taken. But we don't really see it. I think we are getting at the stage where we actually read all these, atrocities that is occurring by the bad apples in the police services. But I don't think the public see the results. And that, for me, is very important. I mean, we have numerous discussions. In fact, we had one special meeting with the Honourable Minister addressing the excess force of the SATs and everything. But what happened? I mean, I personally gave specific examples to the Minister, high-ranking officers, but still nothing has happened to these people. It seems some people they just think they're untouchable. So, yes, I support, but really, we really, really want to see action. Thank you.
Members, thank you very much for the support. I think the Honourable Groenewald raises a good point as well. We also know that the Minister has publicly announced that he has done asked for an order to be done around these issues. And I think it would be apt for us to also write to the Minister and ask him what is the outcome of this and what is the point and what is the steps that are going to be taken against those police officers who are found within the SAPS with criminal records. But also, what are we doing going forward? We will definitely address that. I will also ask the committee secretary, I see Kanisha is apparently on an oversight visit, that you, when we take a break, get hold of one of the communications guys to come so that we can draft a statement that we can issue on behalf of the committee on this issue. I think it's important that we make our voice heard as representatives of the people as well. So if you can do that for me, I would appreciate that. The issue of the police teams is something that we do need to address. I have raised it with the Honourable Muluriki George when he raised it with me that I believe, yes, we must do it, but we need to differentiate between police officers that are killed on duty or because they are police officers, and those that get killed because they've been at a place where they shouldn't have been, or they've been in a club and they were drunk and they got part of a fight, or they were disobedient and they got involved in a fight as ordinary South Africans, those that are killed as ordinary South Africans, so that we get a clear picture of what the actual police killings in South Africa is as well. I think it's important that we do address this issue, but we can only address the issue correctly if we have purified figures around these issues, and I think that is important. The other issue that I want to alert members to is that we will soon, as soon as we're done with the DNA bill, and I'm hoping that we would put aside 2 weeks for it, but I don't think we will need 2 weeks for it. We've done a lot of progress that have been made. That in one of those meetings that we hopefully have spared, that we would call the subs management to the committee
to come speak to us on the police university and anti-corruption units. I found it extremely frustrating that we've just exited a budgeting process, and the university or the corruption unit was not mentioned to us one single time, not in the annual performance plan of the police, neither in the budget. And we've got serious questions that we need to ask that. While I personally welcome the fact that they're looking at professionalising the South African Police Service in that way, we must remember that it's taxpayers' money that are going to get used, and that we need to have clarity on how it's going to be used. Where is this place going to be? They say the training college in Paul. So the next question arises, where does the detectives go that normally goes there? How are they going to pick those police officers who are going to go on these courses? How are they going to select them? What is the financial implications? Where does the finances come from? Is 5 months realistic in terms of establishing a university that is acknowledged as really a place of high standards? How is it possible that we're doing that? So there are definitely questions that I need to come and answer. But the bigger question for me in my mind is, why did they not mention this to us when we were dealing with the annual performance plan and when we were dealing with the budget process? So we will be calling them for a meeting on the anti-corruption unit and on this. It's also frustrating that these announcements have been made during a time that Parliament is in recess. It makes engagement on these issues just that much more difficult. So I just want to alert members to it. And lastly, if I may, I want to welcome our new researcher sitting next to me, Tembani and Mbatlanganya. Am I correct? Welcome to the committee. He will now be assisting Nicolette. She's been working for almost a year on her own, and I'm sure she's as happy as we are to see you here. Tembani was also the person that did the critique for us on the green paper. I said to him I enjoyed reading it last night, so he's very welcome. He comes from, previously has been with the ISS, and he's known as a very good researcher. We're welcoming, we're looking forward to working with you. I hope they've warned you that this is a committee that tends to work until 8 o'clock in the evenings. but I'm sure you will enjoy it at least. Welcome. Members, please make use of Nicolette and Malone in terms of preparation for our meetings as well. Then Barney. Can I hand over to the Secretariat for the presentation on the green paper, and can I ask you then just to start off with giving us an overview of your consultation processes?
Okay, I think that it is included in the presentation, but let me introduce the delegation before I start. I think people know Ms. Bilkis Omar, who's the Chief Director of Policy and Research, and with me also is the Director for Policy, Mark Rogers, who some members may not have met because he joined the Secretary quite recently. Just to say that before I hand over to Bilkis and Mark to present, that this is a green paper, it's not a white paper, and that it is therefore a document that is out there to get solicit opinions and views, etc., etc., and that we are aware that we need to then structure those comments and look at the entire structure of the document in terms of the final white policy that will be drafted. And in fact, we actually have set towards the end of August, around the 23rd of August, a 3-day with a drafting team that involves some academics, etc., that are going to help us with the final structuring and of the document. So people just need to be aware that it's not that we are presenting to you a white paper, we are presenting a discussion document which should raise debate and discussion around issues as opposed to a finalised white paper. So then I'll just, and I think Bilkis will take you through some of the consultation processes that have happened and are still planned to happen in that process, but just be aware that we are meeting, I think, on the 23rd of August for 3 days around that time when we've got all the submissions in to look at the drafting meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Secretary. Good morning, honourable members, honourable chair. Just in terms of the background on the consultation process, as you recall, we advertised the green paper for public comment and placed it in the Government Gazette during June 2013. As the Secretary mentioned, it is a draft document, so we welcome the inputs that you would give us today until 5 o'clock. And the deadline was the 6th of July, but we extended it until the 31st of July based on the requests from the public. We've been to 4 provinces already. It's been Limpopo, KZN, Northwest and Western Cape. We have Free State tomorrow. We've had very good contribution from SAPS as well as the stakeholders that we've been meeting. We've also met with the Metro Chief, Police Chiefs from each of the metros. And because they were key stakeholder, we found we had to consult with them. When we sent a presentation to you a week ago, we had received about 11 submissions, public submissions. By yesterday, we had received already about 20. So we're still awaiting a few more because we've got more than a week left. Like we said, it's a discussion document and all the inputs received from the provinces and parties will be considered and input into the white paper. We're having the 3-4-day consultation process like the Secretary mentioned. And we realize for the consultation we are going to be redrafted, so we welcome today's input. Just on the key issues arising out of the provincial consultations, we've had a lot of comments on that need clear definitions, for example, of professionalism. What are we talking about when we're talking about professionalism? So we need to define these things clearly. Also, there's a role clarification required between CPS and CSF. CPS has come up with all the 4 provinces, the issues around CPS, but we do have a draft policy framework at the Secretariat, and we're looking towards a policy on that. Just other issues on the CPS, the role of CPS as an oversight mechanism needs clarification, and then also placement and location and then funding. Also, these are other issues that came out of the CPS consultations. There was also issues on the lack of coordination of CPS at municipal level. Issues also around the private security industry have come out in the private consultation, for example, the role of the private security industry and the role it plays in crime combating and crime prevention, and also the need for a formalized partnership with that in this regard. Other issues include the emphasis on single police service, which implies commitment to ensuring proper command and control, and we're clear about that in the paper. It's about command and control. And the broader issues of safety and security, this has come out a lot, I think even within the staffs. Issues of safety have been coming out, even though it's a paper on policing, but we realize we need to address issues of safety as well when we're doing paper on policing. And I might just add that we are going to be drafting a white paper on safety and security once this consultation process has been finalized on the green paper on policing, that is. Better alignment of performance measures and indicators, that's another issue that's come out to us in the provinces. And then the performance measurement, should crime stats be the primary tool of assessment? I think the police are concerned about issues like that. In terms of moving forward, Secretary and I just mentioned that we will be having a workshop at the end of August with our reference group, which is made up of experts from civil society. So once we finalize all provincial consultations, we will review these and input into the white paper. We also want to critically assess what has worked and what has not worked. So, and then we'll build on certain issues raised, for example, in clarifying the role of the police board. That's another issue that's come up. And then the development of an overarching implementation approach. And then we're not writing a strategy, it's a policy document, it's a guiding document for the police, so we can't get operational. But we want to make the document a tool more interactive that staff can use it for operations. And then, like I said, we're going to be updating the reference book in the final draft. I'll head over to Ma for this now to the presentation of the continent green paper.
Excuse me, morning, honourable members. I'm going to look at the... I'll take you through the content of the green paper. The slide that you see there just gives you an overview of the main chapters of the paper. In terms of the background, we looked at why the need for a green paper on policing. And essentially, it was found that we need a comprehensive policy that would assist us in the development of policing strategy over the medium to long term. So when we delved a bit further and we looked at what would be the object of this green paper, what would be the end position, what did we want to achieve ultimately, and we identified a few key points, one being to entrench effective and accountable policing, two to build on some of the successes around instilling democratic policing, and displaying a commitment to a human rights approach, I think importantly, the third bullet point is something that we, I think, will come up quite a lot throughout the document. Looking at transformation of SAPS, but particularly in the context of 21st century policing, we ask the question, what does transformation mean in a current context, and how would SAPS internalize that and make sure that we adapt and respond accordingly? And then last point there is respond to a constantly evolving criminal landscape. As Volkus mentioned, the issues of safety and security have come up quite strongly in a lot of the consultation sessions that we've had, and we recognize that even though this is essentially a green area on policing, SAPS will always have a role to play on the other issues relating to safety and security. So we do recognize that crime does impact on development, and it's something that is mentioned in the National Development Plan as well. So we look at the impact that you know, high levels of violent crime in particular has on undermining development, and how essentially those resources then get channeled away from other social and economic activities towards law enforcement. Other area that we cover in the early parts of the paper is we look at some of the changes that have taken place since 1994 and the impact that has had on policing and the policing environment. So we talk briefly about the culture and the style of policing in a democratic society, and how we've had to change our approach to fit the ideals and the objectives of a democratic state. We look at the importance role that our CPS play and the whole approach to partnership policing, and how we need to bolster that to ensure that there's sustainable safety implementation, particularly at a local level. And then also that one of the issues that was raised in the introduction, the role of CPS in terms of oversight, also the CSF process that's been initiated. We also touched briefly on the increased involvement of SAPS at a regional, continental, and international level, and then the rapid growth of the private security industry and the interplay between the private security industry and the police, and how we need to look at structuring those relationships and those engagements. The National Development Plan, while the Green Paper, by the time the National Development Plan was adopted, we were already basically in the final drafting stages of the document, but we then went back and took a lot of what the NDP is saying and tried to pull some key themes from the NDP into the document. So Vision 2030 starts by recognizing, you know, that safety and security is an important precondition for human development. And then it also talks about the key areas of improvement and innovation across all sectors of government, including policing. And then it even goes a bit further to say that in order to achieve some of the long-term developmental goals that we talk about in the NDP, we need to have in place a well-resourced, professional, and highly skilled police service to give effect to some of those goals and objectives. And then we also took some guidance in terms of looking long-term how policing strategy and practice needs to be innovative to allow SAPS to respond to changes not only internally but externally as well. And we'll see that later on in the presentation when we talk about some of the I won't call them emerging crimes, but crimes that have become more and more prevalent, like organized crime and cyber crime. Again, issues that receive quite a bit of focus in the NDP. In terms of confronting crime in South Africa, here we still retain that interlink between policing and broad issues of crime and safety. And we look at how crime and violence erode social cohesion and trust in the criminal justice system. It limits mobility, so people aren't able to move around freely, participate actively in social and economic life. We look at the various forms of crime and the complex nature and causes of those crime, particularly in your social, economic, and environmental factors. Then we look at some of the other drivers of crime, particularly proliferation of weapons, the organized crime and corruption, substance abuse, child and gender-based violence, and I think what we're trying to pull out there is to look at what role the South African Police Service should be playing in terms of putting dedicated approaches and strategies in place to deal with that. Then we also look at what have been some of the advances in our approaches to addressing crime. post-1994. So we mentioned it earlier, increased international cooperation, and I think importantly, the importance of increased information sharing, both locally and internationally with various law enforcement bodies and organizations. The need for dedicated skills and expertise and intelligence, particularly when dealing with organized crime, again, that is something that is strongly emphasized in the National Development Plan, and it also is very strongly emphasized in the document, as you'll see later on in the presentation. In terms of policing in South Africa, we started by looking at what have been the main issues that have received focus since 1994. So the starting point was organizational transformation, and what were the goals and objectives that were put in place to transform the organization to make sure that it was representative of the demographics, etc., of the country. And I think we recognize that great strides have been made to achieve that, and that's why we questioned early on in the presentation, in terms of organizational transformation and transformation broadly, what should that mean going forward? Again, community-oriented policing, the important role that that plays, and then I think essentially what we're trying to do by writing a green paper is to clarify the roles and responsibilities in terms of crime prevention. I think one of the criticisms, if you would call it, of the 1998 white paper was that at times there could have been a blurring of the lines if you were, you know, between South African Police Service and other organizations in terms of crime prevention. So we'd like to put forward a very concrete definition of what crime prevention should be in terms of policing. Then again, was alluded to earlier that policing has been carried out in line with democratic principles and respect for human rights entrenched in the Bill of Rights. We look at the issue that SAPS is vested with the legal authority to use coercive force in carrying out its mandate. And then we go through some of the issues that need to be considered. It must be balanced against protected rights of the, as measured in the Bill of Rights. It requires a coherent policy framework supported by clear operational guidelines, and that SAPS members need to be adequately equipped both in terms of training and their physical equipment. In terms of policing in South Africa, the continuation of the chapter, when we're looking at a structured law enforcement approach for the country over the medium to long term, the position that we're taking is that we're saying one of the key principles is that we need a structured law enforcement approach. So the mechanisms and the how, you know, is something that we can thrash out. But essentially, this structured approach should maximize our capacity for effective and efficient policing. And looking at how we tighten our structures to achieve the streamlining of issues around command and control, discipline, and training. Then we will look at transformation again. I mentioned it a few times, and essentially what we're saying there is that transformation needs to be a continuous process. It must address the entire HRD value chain, all the way from recruitment to retirement. Something that has come up uniformly across all the consultation sessions that we've had to date, particularly with members of SAPS, is the issue around career pathing, which falls within the ambit of your recruitment to retirement. So we need to look at how do we career path our officers from the time they enter the organization. And I think that speaks to, you know, many other issues such as building morale, building professionalism, etc. But essentially that's one of the points that we're trying to make there. And that any decisions around transformation must be guided by clear strategies. In terms of the police as a service, one area that's generated a fair amount of discussion, the position that the Green Paper is taking is that we think that focusing primarily on the rank structure may detract from some of the other key practical mechanisms that could be put in place to address some of the issues that there may be a concern. Interesting issues around democratic policing, and I would imagine that like we were told to define what professionalism is, perhaps we need to tie on a definition of what democratic policing is in the paper. that our approach to policing must be defined by a commitment towards professionalism, fairness, transparency, and accountability. And I think that second bullet point is particularly important, because if we have fairness, transparency, and accountability, it will go a long way to manage some of the issues that may be prevalent at the moment. And then again, added to that, and complementary to that, is strategic leadership and management capability needs to be strengthened overall. Around community-oriented policing that has become entrenched through our CPS and our CSFs, this needs to speak to the method of policing and not just about the actual structure. And again, reference is made to the role of an active citizenry in Vision 2030, and particularly the importance of, and I would place emphasis on, effective coordinated partnerships, because without that, or in the absence of that, sustainable safety implementation will be greatly hindered. So we're really just reinforcing the position that has been taken previously. And then to implement that, we need strong leadership at a local level, and that means just improving the overall level of accountability at station level particularly. One area that we've tried to dedicate a bit of focus on is the role of detectives as one way of achieving some of the long-term goals and objectives that the police as an organization has set in terms of reducing and combating crime. And when we look at the capacity of the detectives for improved criminal investigations, we look at the need for dedicated resources and a concerted focus on training, particularly around specialist investigative techniques, the skills and knowledge that's required to deal with particularly sophisticated organized criminal activity, cyber crime, which is mostly faceless, borderless, and then our sexual offenses and gender-based violence. The chair made reference to sexual offence and gender-based violence in our opening address, and I think that just reinforces the severity of the situation and what needs to be done to capacitate our detectives to be able to deal with that. And then just breaking that down a bit further, when we looked at the detectives, we looked at some key areas around the detective service and detectives as individuals that we felt needed to get some kind of attention, so hopefully as a package would place them on better footing to be able to deal with the many challenges that they have. And firstly, looked at the size of the detectives, and there has been ongoing discussions through the portfolio committee on the detective dialogue, and essentially we're really just supporting that process by saying that there must be a scientific method for determining the ideal number in relation to the needs and requirements of the detective service as a whole. In terms of the quality of detectives, I think this links back to what the National Development Plan is saying, improving the overall quality, recruiting and retaining skilled personnel. In terms of the training, the concerted effort should be placed on training and development, and I think training should not be only ongoing, but it needs to be current, it must be a high standard, so that they constantly, the environment, particularly in specialist areas, is constantly changing, so that the standard of training needs to be of such a nature that our officers and our detectives are always in a position to not only respond, but to anticipate and stay one step ahead. So that's the position that the Green Paper takes on that aspect. In terms of management of detectives, just a few points there. Clear objectives, targets and performance indicators must allow for effective management, regular monitoring assessment. So that's just the overall management of the detective service, and then individual detectives as well to look at the caseload, how dockets have been managed, that kind of process. The document briefly talks about two integrated policing approaches, the basic service delivery approach, which is really your local station level, so your face of service delivery as you walk into your police station, and then your targeted approach, which is more your specialist investigation, which we've just covered. There on your basic service delivery, we're saying that stations need to be adequately resourced and effectively managed. Management must be held accountable for the internal management of the station, and also for the implementation of national instructions and operational plans. As one of the approaches to policing, we talk about intelligence-led policing, and we're not suggesting that this is something that hadn't been applied within SAPS, but we rather want to stress the importance of a more dedicated focus on making sure that intelligence-led policing becomes a key cornerstone of our approach to policing, because if correctly applied and utilized, the benefits for the organization are immense. So in terms of collaborative working relationships, it can enhance the effectiveness of SAPS, but we need to have coherent processes for collecting, organizing, and utilizing information. And essentially, that should place us on a footing where we can make better decisions, better resource allocation based on sound information, and also then we have a better understanding of our operational, our strategic, and our tactical environments. And I think that's the position that we're trying to strive towards. In terms of the DPCI, we touched very briefly on issues around the structural and functional independence of the Hawks. We look at the mandate, which remains to prevent, combat, and investigate national priority offences, and we just look at the how those national priority offences will be determined through policy guidelines issued by the Minister. In terms of mainstreaming police professionalism, this is one area that we've hopefully tried to pull from beginning to end, is the issue particularly around professionalism, because it comes out quite strongly both in the Minister's 10-point plan as well as in the NDP. And one of the areas that we look at in terms of mainstreaming professionalism is we look at issues around police restructuring. And essentially what we're saying is that any future decisions around restructuring needs to be guided by proper assessment of organizational structures and processes, and needs to be based on a thorough needs analysis and environmental scan. There must be a clear transformation strategy and relevant policy guideline in place, clear definitions regarding roles and responsibilities, streamlined management and accountability. And I think importantly, last point, there must be sound evidence, evidence-based research and based on best practice examples on how restructuring should be carried out. Also around recruitment, something again that is a lot of members have felt quite strongly about in our consultations with SAPS, and not only with SAPS, both with community stakeholders, is the issue around recruitment. And we need to look at how we find the best. So our focus needs to shift from quantity but more to quality. And I think the question is, and those are some of the questions that we've been asking our communities and our other stakeholders, is what is the right type of police officer? You know, we need to get from them. I mean, there's many characteristics that are around, but those are some of the discussions that we're having in terms of what is the right type of police officer. And the National Development Plan also makes reference to that. It talks about training as an important component in developing the right type of police officer. We've mentioned the issue of training of detectives and specialist investigators. I mentioned that it must be current and undertaken continuously. Seeing out of the career pathing of officers. Another aspect is the performance measures, or how SAPS as an organization is being measured. And we're saying that performance measures need to be based on clear assessment frameworks, should essentially allow SAPS to measure progress towards their strategic and operational goals. It must be regularly assessed and consistently applied and utilized. It should focus on outcomes rather than outputs, and this just kind of supports what came out in one of the provincial sessions. And the example that is used in Green Paper is, for instance, should recorded crime in and of itself be used as the only or the primary measure for measuring police performance? What are potential drawbacks from using that as a performance measure? So we'd like to generate some discussion around that. Then another key aspect that we feel, you know, needs to be dealt, and again, in some way it was alluded to earlier, dealing with internal corruption. Here we need proper processes and systems in place to deal, detect and prevent it. And essentially addressing corruption is broadly tied to the goal of building a professional and accountable police service. So we need to make sure that our systems are properly equipped to deal with that. It requires improved processes for receiving, processing and analyzing complaints. Around command and control, again, something that has been many people have been very vocal about in our sessions. The importance of command and control in ensuring accountability, the need for clear and regular communication at all levels within the organization. It requires that officers are clear on their roles and responsibilities. Directives must be clearly understood and carried out. And there must be clear lines of communication must essentially improve accountability. The last two chapters of the paper deal with the institutional arrangements from a national level all the way down to a local level that are in place to support policing in the country. So we start with the role of the minister in terms of developing policy, ensuring the effective implementation thereof, allocating managerial responsibility, and ensuring overall accountability. We also look at the roles of other competencies that report to the minister, such as SAPS, the National Commissioner, the Civilian Secretariat, IPED and CIRA. We touched on the issue of the DPCI and the importance of securing structural and functional independence, and then clarifying the mandate of the DPCI in terms of investigations. At a provincial level, we talked briefly about the role of the NECs in terms of oversight, building partnerships and implementing safety strategies, the role of the Departments of Safety and Liaison or Community Safety, the establishment of the provincial secretariats, which is underway in most provinces in aligning with the civilian secretariat, particularly the role of provincial departments in implementing safe strategies and the CSF process, how they position to build partnerships and to continuously work at strengthening and entrenching those partnerships through proper management of CPFs. And then the role of local government, I think we've noticed from the consultations that this is a bit of a difficult area. It seems to be a bit of a grey area. But nonetheless, local government has a role to play in implementing CSS and national safety strategies at a local level. They need to be interfacing with CPS and their role in terms of forming partnerships with local police. And I think essentially that brings us to the end of the presentation. Thank you, honourable members.
Sorry, Chet, just one comment, which I think Wilkie thought I was going to raise and I thought she was going to raise, is when we published the green paper, we put it on the website and we put adverts in the newspaper. I just wanted to give the committee some idea that prior to the publishing of that green paper, we were getting an average of 300 hits a day on our website. The first two weeks after the green paper was published, that went up to 5,000 hits a day, and then it declined again at the last couple of days in June. So we suspect that those 2 weeks were when people were downloading the green paper, because that's the only reason to explain why the traffic on our website would have jumped from 300 to 5,000 a day.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the presentation. Members, I would just like to structure the meeting. I think we can adopt the same approach as we did through the budget processes. We do a round of questions or comments. Obviously, there will be comments. There won't only be questions. And I could again ask members to limit that to two, and we will take another round, and we will do so until we're done. So critique, comments, things that you feel that are lacking, questions, feel free to raise it now. Can I get an indication of hands from members? Honourable Ndlovu, Honourable Kwela Barnard, Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Sabia, Honourable George, and myself in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. I must thank the Secretariat for bringing this document to us for looking at it. Firstly, Jefferson, I wanted to talk about structurally of the document. Because I wonder if all the stakeholders to be put in one place. While I'm talking like that, I'm talking about CPS, I'm talking about CFS, I'm talking about private security companies, to be put in one place so that we are able to say these are the components of the police and so on. They mustn't be mixed with police per se. Secondly, Chairperson, what I wanted to see in this document, although it has a one line somewhere under the detective, we talk about career pathing, but at the end of the day, if you are a detective and you are heading a station somewhere, are you removed to be a head of detective or what? Those are the questions that should be answered correctly so that a person who is qualified to be the head of detectives or qualified to be a station commissioner, what does he lose and so on and so forth. The career pathing of the detectives, it mustn't end up to be just the detective. Lastly, Chairperson, is the... I want to go back to the training. Let us look at the training. Is it a year, 2 years? Fine. How do you categorize these 2 years? So the first 6 months is do what? The second 6 months is do what? The third 2 6 months is do what? And the last 6 months is do what? Because we have, if it's 2 years training, how do you categorize them? What do you want to find me as a student after these 2 years? What qualification do you want me to get out of this college? At the end of the day, after these 2 years, I must be seen to be a professional police personnel or a professional police person who can be sent to any school and be able to cooperate and work with the police because I've been trained properly. Therefore, the categorization of these 2 years should be clear in understanding that what do we encourage the students when they are going there. And in the encouragement, Chairperson, is that how do you scrutinize the right persons? There are right people, and there are wrong people. There are right people to be trained, there are wrong people who are being trained. How do you categorize them? How do you separate them? Where do you separate? Without talking about micro-testing as a whole, but how do you separate them at the beginning so that you are able to say, these are my claims that at the end I want them to be successful. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. And I'm calling you Chair, even though we have to settle later. for my initial two, I don't see in this paper any acceptance. In fact, it seems that we're raising this old issue that's been around for 7 years. This claim about a single police service. Now, there's no acceptance that the Constitution allows for municipal and metro police services to enforce municipal bylaws and also to act as a multiplier in relation to the SAP's fight against crime. Now, I'm sure everyone in this room knows that this proposal will attempt to centralize all law enforcement agencies under the SAPs and remove control of municipal and provincial law enforcement from the municipality and the province. It ignores Section 206.7 of the Constitution completely, and that explicitly allows for the establishment of municipal police services. So this is going to be a huge issue if this goes down this road. It is a huge issue. You know it, I know it, and I don't think we want to go through this fight. But if it's going to be, that's where it's going to end up. My second issue is your reference to the NDP. And I think the section on policing in the NDP is exemplary. I mean, it's really outstanding. But I have a problem with the fact that you actually disagree with the section of it in this paper, in that you say it's not necessary to remove the apartheid era ranks that were reintroduced by Bheki Cele or during his time. Now, do you feel that as the Secretary, you have the right to argue with the NDP, the document that's been accepted as the guiding document for this nation? I don't think so, but I'd like you to explain how you think you have that right. And if you do, then I don't understand why you're referring to it at all, if you feel you have the right to simply ignore sections of it.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question is, yes, it's a green paper on police. It sounds very good. It's theory. I just want to take one quote. For instance, you say that when it comes to corruption, for instance, dealing with corruption requires systems and processes to detect and prevent it. Of course. My question is, what do we have in this green paper that we don't have in theory in the police services? Can we get those differences? Because then I can make a decision whether it is an improvement or not. Because what I'm reading here is supposed to be part of the police already. My second question, Jefferson, you say that the Metro Police Chiefs were also consulted as a key stakeholder. Can I hear which Metro Police Chiefs are them, all of them, and what were their views? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Sabir. Thanks, Jefferson. Mine is on performance measures. You're saying that the performance must be regularly assessed. After how long? After a year? After 2 months? To be specific. Thanks.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, I'm going to make a statement. It's closer to what the Honourable said. Some of the things that have been said here are there in the policies. So the first question you're asking, if you are not coming up with something new, what's the intention of this? You see, the general statements that are here. You see, the good gentleman, they say the role of local government. He said the just the term used, there's no clarity. But I thought this is supposed to be discussion that gives clarity. Not the presenters themselves in if we say it is a green, it's a green area. I wanted to use the term he used. He says a grey area. But this is supposed to be discussion, it's supposed to clear those grey areas. No, he just left it. So that's why I say, you see, for instance, there are a lot of good things that have been said here. But these good things were supposed to be happening, some of them. Now, the question is, I put a document of this nature, how do we make sure the good things, which are there, some of them, how do we improve policies so that they are implemented? You see? He talks about the growth of private security industry. If the police are not doing their work and citizens feel that they are not safe under the police, the security industry is going to grow. How do you address that? Because also the security industry to me is not a bad thing, but it's also not very good. There are problems with it. But we can only deal with the growth of security industry once we deal with what you talked about, entrenching effective and accountable policy. You know, you talk about the internal corruption, Madam Chair. He just mentions it to you. But it's a very important thing. You know, in yesterday's paper, in the Eastern Cape, there was an article where in these shoes, the police are literally bribed in front of people. They say, police, give us 50 rand to go and buy meat from, and give us, and they say it happens in front of other police. And even the police, someone said, even the other police in here know about this corruption. They do nothing about it. Now, when you talk about policy, in my mind, how do we make sure that these things are addressed effectively. Because if you take it another part, in the police now, they are against internal corruption. So when you talk about internal corruption, you are not telling us anything new. We know that. And the police, even the National Commission, starting from the National Commission down to the three, they know that corruption is not allowed in the police service. But it is there. That is why I was saying, when you look at this policy, you would look for situations to say, how do we improve the police service?
Yeah, and I'm also going to start with a comment and then I'll follow up with a picture. I think if I listen to members as well, and that's my feeling to some extent as well, is that when you look at the green paper, you want to see a roadmap for moving forward. In other words, nothing wrong in saying what is in steps that is working and what is not going to change. So if we still believe the community policing is the way to go, they put it up front and say that. But then also address clearly the policies around what's going to change, whether that structure with INSAPs, which in my mind means that this green paper can also include organogram, quite frankly, of SAPs, because it's one of our frustrations all the time, is that organogram of SAPs changes as leadership in SAPs change. And that comes with huge financial implications. Then also, in terms of approach, climate fighting approach, the size of SAPs, you make the point to some extent, I heard you say, Mark, that it's now about quality and not quantity, and I agree with you, because I personally believe we have enough police officers in terms of numbers. Whether all of them should be police officers is another question. But we have enough in terms of numbers, but now we need to get the quality. We agree with you. But let's also say what we believe is the ideal figure for South African police, what it should be. And then in terms of the issue of performance measures as well, you mentioned that quite correctly, sir, but what are we going to do? How are we going to measure in future? And I agree. I think the fact that the crime stats is the only measurement is problematic, because that leads to station commanders manipulating crime statistics. So it is a problem, but what are we putting in place? We would like to see, I think, from the green paper, can I explain it this way? In my mind, it starts with recruitment. And the first question comes to mind is, how do we recruit and who do we recruit? Do we appoint at the point of recruitment or do we appoint after training? And should we not appoint after training and evaluation? Then, in my mind, the next logical step would be career. Where are we going with the SAPS career? Now, I find it extremely disturbing that in the green paper you talk about a college and yet we have an announcement of a university that is not linked to this. One would have expected if that was thought through that it would be in the green paper, the detail would be here. And I almost get the feeling you were caught by surprise as well by this announcement. Command and control would be the next thing. How do we see it if we talk about it? Promotions, because we know it's an issue. We know that's one of the things that used with insights to manipulate situations, to buy favoritism, etc., etc. Why are we not clear in the green paper how promotions are going to be done? Transfers. What is the processes around transfers? Let's be clear and discuss around those issues. I also agree with the comments that has been made that when we talk about supporting structures, that it should rather be one chapter. So when we talk CBS, CFS, that it be there. But I think we need to be more clear about how we see those, the roles of the CPS and CFS as well. And address some of the issues that we know are there around these structures. The secretariat should be there. IPA should be there. Clear what is the new role. Is it working? What needs to change with INSAPS in order to make that relationship a workable relationship? Parliament, completely missing from your green paper in terms of a accountability measurement. And I think we've got the opportunity here to actually address it. Sorry, can I just interrupt myself in terms of training as well? There's a lack in the green paper of enforcing making use of external skills in training South African police, whether it's during basic training, whether it's specialized training. And one of the cultures that we need to break in SAPS is this culture that nothing for us without us. We need to break that culture. And there's no... The dinosaur couldn't survive. And a dinosaur couldn't survive because a dinosaur couldn't develop. And you either adapt to the fact that there are people outside of the police that have got more skills than what you have in the police available, and therefore you draw them in terms of training, or you die. Then the approach, crime-fighting approach, I think we need to be clear about what we are saying. Be explicit, say, yes, community policing is still the right way we're going to go, however the following need to change, or et cetera, et cetera. I also think there's an overemphasis on corruption and organized crime. People's perceptions about crime are influenced mostly by personal crime. Crime against a person. Violent crimes. That's what influences people's perceptions. Is the housebreaking, is the assault, etc. And then, in terms of your intergovernmental relations, I think, in a way, we put too much emphasis only on SAPS's responsibility. But we should also look at the responsibility of the other government departments in the fight against crime. And that includes health in terms of laboratory services for toxicology reports. It includes local government in terms of planning, as you develop a new town, to also plan for the building of a police station, for the site, for adequate lighting. We know that in Kailicha, that's one of the challenging problems that we have, is that SAPS can't reach a crime scene. Because checks are not numbered properly, streets are not lighted, there's no proper lighting, there's potholes, etc., etc. So what are other departments, government departments' responsibilities in this as well? And I think we need to address it without fear to do so. And then you speak about the levels of the policing and the proper, but I think what we lack here is what is proper resourcing of the police as well. What's the minimum proper resourcing? If we have a station, what is the minimum resourcing that we are talking about? And in that sense, I almost want to summarize what I'm saying in this way by saying to you, you have an opportunity, but you also have a responsibility to draft policy on this issue. And not try and be nice about it. Yes, the operational issue is not your field. It's not your terrain in order to prescribe to such in terms of that. But in terms of what type of police service we have, how it's going to look, how it's going to operate, that is the responsibility of the secretariat. That is your responsibility. And you must not be pussyfooting around this. You've got to be clear and precise around it. Then the question from my side. There has been some criticism that especially from NGOs, and specialists out there, that they haven't properly been consulted. I heard you say that you've extended the public participation process and that you are going to have a workshop. Do you believe that this would be adequate enough in terms of involving those people? And then secondly also, can you maybe just give us an indication of your reference group? I'm not asking for the individuals, but what type of people are involved in the reference group? Okay, but we're going to give you an opportunity to answer to the comments. Let's not argue the issues. I think the thing is we're putting issues on the table. Give you an opportunity to answer to some of the comments, but also specifically to the questions.
Chair, just to say that once we extended the date, by the time we have taken this document back to Cabinet, it would have been 3 months of consultation, which we think is quite a substantial amount with the workshops, with the reference groups, etc. So we're expecting to only be able to take this back to Cabinet by the end of August, so that will be 3 months, probably around the 8th of August, 3 months from the time in which the paper was introduced. The reference group in both ISS, a number of academics like Anthony Minow, the people in this room that are part of the reference group, people like Sean, etc., that are part of that reference group. It also involves individuals like Aldous Kirk, who have done work on this issue, etc. And the agreement with them, because we also that there were also issues raised around the structure of the document, as I said up front, and the agreement was let's get the public comments to come back and look at the structure, because after all it is a green paper, and that's about the structure and process flow within the document, which I think has been raised, Honourable Member Paul and yourself have both raised issues around that. So I'm not going to go into the structuring, because there is a process that is going to look at those structuring issues. I think Bilkies will deal with the training issues and the career pathing of detective, but I think one thing that the document is very clear on is that you cannot become a detective until you've undergone the training. In fact, there's some things that we would like to even maybe expand on further in the document based on some international engagements we've had recently, where you do the training and then you apply for a detective post. And the same applies to corruption. There's some strengthening of corruption where one of the things that has come out internationally is that if your approach to corruption is very clear and everybody knows, I do this, this is what the consequences are, and this is how processes will follow, it makes it a lot more easy not to challenge that today. So there's something that from recent engagement that we've had, for example, with some of the pieces that we might want to strengthen certain things on there. But I don't think that we have dealt with corruption effectively. But what we're saying about corruption is based on some international research and with the IRS and a number of it, and also some international commissions and that you cannot deal with corruption just on a bad apple basis. It's also about leadership. And it's also about systems and accountability. And that if you're going to deal with corruption, you need to be able to deal with bad apples and the criminality, but you also need to put in place proper systems and management. And unless you have that kind of management and systems in place, there's always going to be, you increase the opportunities for corruption. So I think that what we've tried to look at is not just dealing with corruption from a bad apples point of view and every day there are more bad apples, etc., but also to look at what systems and processes allow for that to take place. I think that when it comes to the issue of literalization, and as we said earlier, this is a discussion document. It's putting things out there. It's not the policy document yet, so you can't say things. And one of the things that we're saying is it just about rank, or is it more also about culture of the peace? And if you look at international comments from a number of kind of international commissioners and retired commissioners, when they talk about problems around the culture and policing, they're not talking necessarily just about change management structure, etc., but they're talking about professionalising the policing as part of changing that culture through training and recruitment processes, etc. I do think and somebody raised that, is there anything new? And then I'll ask Bilkies to deal with some of the other issues. Is there anything new? And I think to some extent there is some things that we have been quite clear on, like the issue of detectives, which has been a very blurry issue. People have been joining detectives. And then there are other issues which have been evolving in the police, but without a proper clear, where the issues are not necessarily explained. And a clear indication of that is that some of these issues have come up in the Minister's 10-point plan, but we've constantly had to explain them to SAP. I think the point of the Green Paper review is not necessarily to try and reinvent the wheel. I think what the chairperson said about looking at what works and what doesn't work, and identifying that up front, we really raised in our presentation as something we need to do. But where something is working, we need to support it through the putting that into policy. And where it's not working, we need to reassert that policy in SAP. But, I mean, I think as Mark said, intelligence-led policing is there, but it's not as strong as it should be. Issues around detectives is there, and it's not as strong as it should be. And then I'll ask Bilkies and Mark to respond to some things, but I think some of the things, particularly some of the issues that were raised by the chairperson, are suggestions that are also being made around the document. So some of the issues we need to respond to, and I'll ask Mark and Bilkies to respond to them, and some of them are suggestions that we need to take on board in terms of the draft document.
Bilkies, before you respond, can I make this tea is ready? I just don't want us to have cold tea. So it also gives you an opportunity to divide the questions between the two of you, between yourself and Mark. It's 10:55. Can we be back 10:10 and just have a quick tea break? Thank you.
We're almost there. We're almost there. We're almost there. We're almost there. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Maybe thank you very much. We're back. We can continue, Bilkis.
Thank you, Chair. The question on the detective career pathing, the NDP is quite clear about the two streams of policing, and it's something we also talk about in the Green Paper. So the one stream will be for commissioned officers, that's managers, those who want to choose a career in management, and in the non-commissioned is for those who want to stay in the detectives. Now, as we're working on the Critters, obviously we're also back here on the detectives policy and the recommendations that we made last year. And we've been looking at the recruitment retirement strategy of the staff as a whole, but particularly detectives, and that's, it's quite clear, and it addresses issues on detectives' career parking, but it's noted that we need to be clear in the Green Paper on this. In terms of the 24 months basic training, the 24 months is divided into 10 months basic training, where recruits need to stay at the colleges. Thereafter, there's a 12-month field training, and it's 6 months in the client service center and then 6 months in the field. Thereafter, the members go back for 2 months to do an assessment at the training college again based on the training. So that's how the training is divided into the 24 months. On the grey area that Mr. Rogers spoke about, I think what he's trying to say is, as we've been on public consultations, the provinces, it's becoming clear that there's no road clarification of municipalities, who's doing safety, who's in charge of CSS. So I think that's the grey area he's talking about, and we need to, in as much as we have discussed this in the Green Paper, we need to be more clear also so people have an understanding of this. In terms of the vision, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that we found, that in our mind the vision is professionalizing the police, making sure that it's community oriented, and ultimately that they protect the people. The police's role is to protect the people, but I realize we're not clear about this as well in the Green Paper, and we know that as well. You mentioned on training, there's no mention on the use of external people for training. It's something that we've also becoming highlighted in the detectives policy that we're doing, that we need to mention this in the Green Paper, that, and we're recommending that in the detectives policy, that those retired from the service, use them for training of detectives at the academies. But it can be across the board in policing. On the IGR, and the role of other government departments. Remember, as you recall, we started doing draft reviewing the white paper of safety and security, and this included all the other government departments. But when the paper was split, we had a tension. It's a paper on policing. How much of safety issues do we include in the policing paper? It's something that has been coming up, even from DEFCOM. You know, you're neglecting safety issues. But we are going to redrafting a white paper on safety and security, and we thought in that paper we'd be dealing with the role of other government departments. But I can see us needing the chapter at least to set the scene on the role of other government departments, particularly in relation to policing. On the proper resourcing of stations, you know, once again, I'm raising the detectives policy that we're doing. We're finding increasingly that the RAD is actually quite a good document. The formulas are quite scientific. It's just that RAG is not being implemented at station level because, actually it's being revised as well. They inform us it's been done yearly. But we can talk about that. We'll talk about that when we come to you on the...
Sorry, I understand why members are laughing, because when they were in front of us for the budget, they acknowledge that the current RAG is based on two censuses back data. So it's extremely old.
They show that they use other formulas. We will address that with them in any case. I think the secretary addressed the issue of the reference group, but just to let you know that it's made up of experts from civil society made in the field of crime, policing, and safety as well. So it's quite a nice diverse group of experts. I think Mark will address some of the issues.
Thanks. The one issue that I was asked to look at was the issue around the performance measures. Now, in the document, we talk about the fact that we need to look at alternatives, but we're not really spelling out what those alternatives are. And I think essentially when we're looking at the performance measures of SAPs, we need to look at the multidimensional environment of the SAPs and look at all the other areas of responsibility that SAPs have. So for instance, you know, in terms of visible policing, that's one area that you could look at. In terms of the response, predictable response, you know, in terms of the reliability of that, then the need to satisfy people's requests and explain reasons for actions and decisions, you know, in terms of responsiveness, know how to handle criminals, victims, and public alike, you know, so the competence of our officers to handle those kind of things. So I think there's a broad range of areas in terms of policing that we could look at in terms of how we measure them. Frequency of measurement, I think, would probably depend on the different areas of responsibility. So it could vary anything from, you know, quarterly to biannually to annually. But I think those are some of the areas that perhaps we've not taken note of, and we need to pull that in, because we have it that transfers shouldn't be the only measure, but we have omitted to bring in what the alternatives are. So I think that needs to be brought into the document. Then there was just another question on which metro chiefs were consulted. It was the Joburg Metro, Ekurhuleni, Tshwane, Durban. All of them except for Kevin, who's there.
It was actually organized by the Metro.
One at a time.
It was actually the Metro Chiefs who organized the meeting. So they have a Metro Chief Forum. So if there were people that were absent, it was because they apologized, but they set up the meeting quite well in advance. And just to say that I think they recognize the need to look at standardizing command and control. How that happens is the issue of debate, but I think that there was a recognition that we need to look at changing things, but how that works is was the debating point and how that would work, which is why we say that there needs to be a framework developed around it, and that it's not going to be a quick process, it's going to be a lengthy process. I know the Honourable Member was talking about 7 years, but I know that this is not going to be something that is able to be dealt with as a quick solution to the situation. But the meeting was organized by the Metro Chiefs themselves, so if there are people absent, they had organized meeting.
We must be taking a second round.
Are you done?
Look, I did put a question.
Just your microphone, please.
Yeah, my question about the suggestion yet again that there be a single police service. Nobody, I don't know if the hot potato who was thrown at, but nobody caught it.
I think the Secretary is trying to address that by saying that they are acknowledging that it's not a simple issue and that they are, I know that's what she was referring to, that they're still looking at it. I think we must also be clear in our minds if we read the Constitution. The Constitution is quite clear about it, that the legislation around Metro Police can't be drafted at provinces, but must be drafted in this House and by this committee. So I think that's one of the shortcomings, because I know, Gauteng, I was involved in after 1994 in the drafting of the policy, of the legislation there. So in fact it's wrong to have provincial policies, to be a national legislation, legislation that addresses that.
Yeah, just to add to what Bilkies and Mark have spoken about, I think that we're going to need to identify particular areas. I mean, Bilkies were talking about the detective policy. So the detective policy and the white paper. So the detective policy expands on certain things in the white paper. There are going to be areas, and the chair's raised a whole range of issues which I think we need to consider. And some of them we would need to put in the green paper, some of them we would need to raise and say policy needs to be developed on these things. So arising from the white paper you would develop, otherwise the white paper might become a 200-page document. So I think that we should identify what must be included and what we would identify that policy needs to be done, like we've done with the detectives, where the policy that we're developing now is not contradictory to what is in the white paper, but it expands on that and goes into a lot more detail on it. And just to say on the issue of training and when a person, we're very clear that one of this kind of pass one pass all system in SAS must stop, where you're just turning out numbers and not quality in terms of the training, and that people need pass or fail their training and then be exited from SAS on the basis of passing or failing their training, and the approach to just turn out numbers easy change. I think that's raised in the white paper, that basically you have to pass or fail your training before your formal appointment in the process.
Secretary, I want to give members another opportunity to ask questions, but in my mind, I just want to put something to you. In 3 minutes, put the documents aside tell us from this white of the green paper, how is the police going to look in the future? Because I think that's what we ask. That's exactly what we need to get an answer from this green paper. So can you, are you saying to us you can from this, because we feel we can't? And I think that's in the end what needs to be answered. Is in future, 10 years from now, this is what our police must and should look like. Is it possible for you to do that?
Yeah, I think there are two key fundamental issues. I think that the two streams of policing is one aspect which will seriously influence what the police look like in the future, where you would have people in the police that will be recruited, and at the point of recruitment they will be identified as people who will remain beat cop or whatever the case may be. And the second is you will have people that will be identified as leaders. So if you take, for example, and I don't really want to use this as an example, but I can't think of an example that is so in public minds as much as that. But if you take, for example, West Point, where you go to West Point and you know when you leave West Point that you are still going to go through the ranks. You might not come in at the most junior level, but you're going to go through the ranks and you are officer material, and you become an officer in that regard. So that we start to develop a professional leadership core in the police. So I think that's the one thing. And I think the second thing that the paper talks about, and it's less about the actual formal structure and more about the key priorities of policing, that the key priority is when we talk about that basic service delivery and the prioritized crime areas, what we're really talking about is the focus should be on the local police station and professional local police stations, and not all this bloated management, but professional local police station and then your specialised areas of policing alongside it. So I think that's what we would like to see in terms of the police. Like that. But I think when we look at the structure, that we need to make those things clearer.
We're taking another round. Honourable Lelaki George, Honourable Kulabana, Honourable Malabatsi, Honourable Groenewald, in that order.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to make suggestions and also supplies. You know, your presentation 11 is the application of force must not be left to the unfettered discretion of police officers. It's a very, very good statement. But I think if it is not properly crafted, you know, I think the Chairperson and others will remember when there was Section 49(1)(c) when it was introduced, it created huge confusion in the police service. In fact, I remember we had to go around to explain to the police, because police did not want to do their work, because they were telling people that they are not allowed to shoot. When that section does not say that, all what it is preventing is them shooting. I'm just saying, I thought in looking forward, you need to say, what is it? Without creating confusion, because you must understand, dealing with police, they are easily confused. You make sure that you've got a clear policy that, like the chairperson was saying, looking forward. How do we make sure that police are not subscribing to this thing of unfettered discretion of police officers using force? I think there you must develop, because you see, this is a discussion document, so that's where you must discuss it. There is the issue of finding the bat. You know, a bigger problem now in the police service is the if you look at some of the police, like some people say, I wonder if some of them are supposed to be there in the first place. How do we measure? Is this system of saying apply, you must have yes, less than 30 years, you must have a matric certificate, you must be a South African citizen, is that enough? If it is not enough, what else can we do to make sure that we recruit what you call here the best? See, because if we just make papers, I think even the system might be flawed, but its intention is to get the best. So I'm saying, is another thing, the proliferation of weapons. I thought you would also develop this. You see, there are two types of weapons which worries me, Madam Chair. There's the weapons that are coming from the citizens out of negligence and so on. You see, we made a law which was trying to make sure that we restrict people having weapons. It looks like it has not worked very well. If you look at the number of weapons that are lost, but I'm more worried about the weapons that are lost by the police and the state institutions, which also end up in the hands of the criminals. I think in your policy looking forward, you could draft something that makes sure that, for instance, I'm of the view now, I might not say it, Madam Chair, but I'm not the view that they're not all police deserve to have weapons with them. Some of them don't, I believe they do. But you need to look at how do we make sure that the weapons and are... They also talk about the improving capacity of the police and detectives. You know, there are laws which the police still badly to implement. Child and gender-based violence acts, they are battling to implement those laws. In fact, you find some of the national instructions. You know, the Child Justice Act. You go to any police station now and say, well, what? They don't know. And it's the safer route which they take. It's just got to implement the law. Instead, because they don't take a chance. I'm just saying, Madam Chair, I know you talk about culture and style of the policy. It's not something, if you know culture, you can't change it overnight. But you need to set up some processes of changing the culture.
Honourable George, I'm going to come back to you again with another round. Can we move on to the next member, please, Honourable Kulabana?
Specialized units. Now, I didn't see reference to them. You know, the SAPS went through this disastrous period under Salebi when he shut all units down. International best practice has long since taught all security entities around the world that specialized units produce results. I don't see any statistical analysis or reference to international best practice. I sometimes feel we're trying to reinvent the wheel. There are hugely experienced entities up there that we have visited, that we have dealt with, that you have dealt with, that have already dealt with the sort of crimes that we're facing and have very successful ways to deal with it. So I really think that I'd like an explanation why the specialized units aren't referred to. The NDP recommends specialized units. So again, I feel as though the NDP is being ignored. And the Green Paper says there should be a review of the decision, but surely the results of the review should be in the policy and not the review itself. So please just talk to me about specialized units. And in the document, you kind of went around the issue of the crime stats, and you did refer to it when you were talking earlier. But I don't see a proposal of freeing up the system. I mean, at the moment it's just a circus once a year of old data. To allow real-time crime statistics to be available at every police station so that an individual can go in and say, I've heard that our house is being hit in a particular way. What is going on? Okay, and then individuals can be forearmed on how to protect themselves. I mean, there's not enough cost to have a cop outside of your house. You've got to do your own bit to protect yourself and tell your neighbours what to look out for, a particular car, a particular vehicle, a particular gang. I don't see any proposals in that regard. You know, currently it's like allowing a matriculant to mark his own paper. There are, as our chair said, there are stations, we know. The one I dealt with particularly took the files out in a wheelbarrow, burned them, said we have a crime. And they all got awards for that. So issues like that happen. Please tell me the alternatives.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the right type of police officer. How will this be identified? Say, for instance, you advertise the names of the recruits for the intake, and a particular one has had a lot of wrongdoings, and no submission is made to say no, so and so has made there and did this and that, and nothing is said about that particular individual. are you now that eventually this individual goes into the intake? Are we saying it'll be now the right type of a police officer? How are we going to make sure that we really get the right type? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Kruneval.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think let's just get the process correct. I mean, from the green paper, it's a basic document. This is where we talk about the principles, where we want to go, as you stated in your slide. It is a comprehensive policy that will guide the development of policing strategy over the medium to long term. That is what it is. From the green paper, we're going to get the white paper that gives more detail. So for me, the green paper is very important because that sets actually where we're going, and as the Chair has said, what do you want in the future? And I see, for instance, Chairperson, that yes, we address key areas to be addressed, and then we talk about the detectives, the DPCI, and everything like that. But I don't see anything about specialized units. Maybe I've missed that. Is it in there? Did I miss it? Or what is the view of that? And when I talk about specialized units, we can go to riot control and all that sort of units, not only like the tactical response unit and everything like that. Thank you, Chair.
I also want to ask a question, and I think what you're missing, maybe as well, and that's why I asked the question, is a vision. And maybe you should have a vision statement that says South Africa wants to have a police service that looks the following, etc., etc., etc. And then I know when I raised the issue of a organogram, you indicated to me during feedback that you can't have an organogram in the white paper, in the green paper. I don't agree with you. I honestly don't agree with you. I think you can have it at least at the national level. We simply say, look, what is part of our concern as we sit here is the fact that the SAPS management grows and grows and grows and grows. And surely we can say, yeah, what we want is the following. We want a national commissioner, we want one deputy national commissioner, and we want divisional commissioners for the following. I'm not saying go the route of breaking that down up to the lowest level, but at least we need to be clear about what we want on a permanent basis. The top promise, yeah. And on a permanent basis. So if that can then become part of the act itself, so if a national commissioner wants to change it, they know they've got to come back to Parliament in order to change that. But you don't have a situation where every time you've got a new commissioner, you've got changes in terms of that. Secondly, I think the document also, yes, you're focusing on detectives, which is good, and we know why you're doing that. So focusing on the DPCR, which is good. But I think we need the same stations. The stations. Because in the end, we need to be clear about that you can't become a station manager unless you've undergone the necessary training in order to become a station manager. We all know, as we sit here, that the majority of them are untrained. Well, not the majority has been proved, but that they are still quite a huge number that are untrained. I think more than 400, if I remember correctly, are the current station managers, according to the latest figures that we got during the budget hearings, are not trained, fully trained as station commanders. So we need to be explicit in terms of that. I think while we're looking at the crimes as well, the document, and I've said it already, you're focusing on organized crime, you're focusing on corruption. Organized crime also, and I think that's something that we need to acknowledge, more often than not, are also responsible for your rapes and your violence, etc. And it's something that we not often recognize. But I think what we are lacking is those focuses on the vulnerable groups. Your age, the people, the aged, your people with disabilities, your gay and lesbian groupings, your refugees, which we know is a problem. We know it is a problem. So I think in somehow those personal crimes need to be addressed as a priority as well. And take it in consideration that you can't go into detail thereof in this document. It's not what you're trying to do, but you're also trying to direct SAPS. That's what the document is trying to achieve, is to direct SAPS. And if we're not silent on it, we're not directing SAPS in terms of this. So we need to do that as well.
I think, you know, Secretary, many of the criticism that you're getting on the papers is basically your own fault as well. In terms of being silent, in terms of what international best practice is in some of these issues. If you argue, and I'm not convinced by it, but if you argue that, not actually, you're not even arguing the point, you're just saying that demilitarization will not lead to professionalism, and I agree with that, but you're also silent on what should happen at around the reins. And I think you can argue that point adequately if you can say what is best practice indicating to us in terms of ranks, and step that up front. And the same with measurements of police and police performance on crime statistics. What are the other measures and best practices indicating to us that should be there? Specialized units, a couple of members have raised it. I think the green paper needs to be specific about certain specialized units that we're not going to compromise on. That is not going to be the decision of SAPS management, but is a policy decision. And I think the green paper, and we're actually giving you the mandate to put that in as well. Be clear about the specialized units that you foresee in the next 20 years must be there. We're not going to review this paper again in the next 20 years. It took us 20 years to review it now, 19 years, a little bit shorter. But the fact of the matter is, let it be specific about what it is that we feel should be there and that we feel we can't be silent about in terms of these things. I think, Bilkis, you answered the Honourable Mululeke George on training, but that's not what he's asking, with all due respect, because he knows the answer to the question that he's posed. He knows exactly what is the 10 months, et cetera, et cetera. I think that the question is more complex than that. Yeah. Sorry, was it yours, Honourable Little? The question is more complex than that. The question is, let us step front what it is, what we want to see after the 10-month training. We want to see a police officer that can go to the station and can do the following duties. Not a police officer that is sent, that is currently happening, from training college to become a detective after 10 months training. Because that's what's happening in reality. So, you know, let us be clear. And I like the fact that you're saying no longer pass one, pass all. That's fine. But I think also be more specific. Make it clear this is what we're saying. And then also I think if we do that approach, adopt that approach, which is correct in my mind, we need to also take cognizance of we've now trained somebody for 2 years, what happens to that person. Mm. And surely there must be a minimum qualification that that person has received during those 2 years that he can actually or she can actually use going into the private sector and applying for something. Otherwise, why are we spending this kind of money on them? Even if it means they go to the private security industry. But they've done some basic training that are recognized even outside. So if they're not successful in becoming a police officer, I would be very interested, for instance, because that was what I was thinking when you were answering that question. How many of the 2,000 intake, how many actually fail? How many actually fail? I think it's insignificant. And it can't be possible. Because I remember sitting in my first year class and the lecturer is saying to us, look to your left, look to your right. Only one of you will be here in your 4th year. Surely it can't be different when we do training in terms of SAPS. I'm not saying that only one in three must pass, but that's what we're working towards. But I do believe what is lacking is that vision statement. This is what we want to see. And maybe that will direct everybody's input a bit better as well if we have something like that. I just want to ask you, Mark. Secretary, don't be apologetic about what you are doing. Don't be apologetic about what you are doing. You're not here to appease SAPS. You're not here to appease any politician sitting in front of you, myself included. You're here to give direction, clear direction, to what type of police service this country needs. And I think you must take that obligation very, very seriously. And if you, in the process, get people that are unhappy about it, it only shows me that you're actually doing the right thing.
We can just say that one of the things we're going to have to grapple with going forward, and I mean, we had this debate, some people said we must just produce a 30-page document because it's a green paper after all, and the detailing goes into the white paper. And even now, I mean, if you look at the 1998 paper, although it focuses on safety and security more broadly, it's a lot shorter than the paper. And I think it's because we are learning lessons both internationally and from South Africa every day. And if you look at things like what the advisory council that was set up, and their findings, which is 2006, which has never really been implemented, but their findings, some of which are identified in the report and some are referred to in the report and others have been incorporated in other ways. We're going to need to develop a process where we decide what goes into the white paper and what we tag for policy development. So, for example, the question raised by Honourable Member George about the application of force or whatever, I think we have said in the document quite clearly that there needs to be a policy on it, and we have informed yourselves that we are working on that policy and we're hoping to finish that policy by the end of the year, but we are also doing some international visits on it, and it actually is very interesting because it deals with exactly what Honourable Member George was saying. It sets out very clearly for people what the parameters are and when and how it doesn't, and what equipment needs to be used, and even issues like, what is it, the ECD, the electronic, we've gone into extensive research into that, looked at what the UN's saying, looked at what different countries are saying, and so the Green Paper refers to that policy, and then we are developing that policy. There are going to be a number of areas like that. On, you know, in terms of the question of how do we make sure we're recruiting the right type of person? I think when Erin Kintz was still the head of the policy and research, he actually, together with a couple of NGOs, including IFS, benchmarked our qualification standards. Because there are a few more than what's mentioned. There's criminal records, there's a couple of other qualifications that were mentioned. And essentially, the qualification standards that we've got are comparable internationally. I think where the difference comes in is now we're looking at this two-stream approach, firstly. But secondly, I think that part of it is the process of how people enter that. And the fact that criteria is not adhered to. I mean, the Honourable Member spoke about somebody with a criminal record being given access. That's clear in the recruitment process that it can't happen. So sometimes it's not always about reinventing the wheel, it's about implementing what exists already. And you don't have to come up with some whole new thing that you just implement what you already have in front of you. But I also think that we as members of the, I think that also FACTS needs to look at, particularly when they start dealing with this two streams approach, they need to start look at going on a drive to visit universities and encourage people from universities, etc., to join that. But I think we as the public also have an obligation because I was in a discussion with another government person the other day and they were saying to their son, if you don't pass, you're going to land up in tax. Now that's the wrong kind of attitude for us as members of the public to have, that we see SATs as, well, if you can't get a job elsewhere, you've got a SAT. And that's not just SATs' responsibility, that's all of us as members of the public to be saying we want to encourage people to join SATs and the right kind of people. So I think it's a process of, one, implementing what already exists, to looking at this two-stream approach and how you do it, and starting to career path somebody not after their training, but when you recruit them, there should be some sort of interview process where you basically deal with the person, and at that point you can identify this person actually would suit better this kind of career path thing. They're on the basis of their CV and interviews, they'll offer some material and we're going to put them into the stream, etc. So the career pathing needs to happen at the point of recruitment and not after training or 2 years after training. So that's when you start identifying whatever. And that's when you start identifying those issues. I think maybe we need to go into a bit more detail about some of those things in the green paper, but the other thing in the white paper rather, I think also the issue of specialised units, and maybe it's something that we've raised in the Green Paper, but maybe it needs to be lifted up in the Green Paper. In fact, when we talk about the targeted priority and stuff, it actually refers to specialised units, and I think we've overemphasised DPCI and maybe not emphasised. We've kind of emphasised too the FCS's DPCI and cyber area, and maybe we need to make that more all-encompassing, that section on that. I think that we said at the beginning of the presentation that one of the things that we have recognized is that we need to have that vision, mission at the beginning of it that tied everything together, and then at the end of it, the kind of way forward and implementation of the green paper, because, or when it becomes a white paper, because I think one of the things, and part of our consultation processes has not been just to engage communities, but to engage provincial SACS people, not just the leadership, not just your management, but provincial people. And there's two reasons for that. One is to get feedback from people on the ground in terms of policing, but also to make people aware of the process. Because I think if you ask SACS about the 1998 white paper, they will ask you, what white paper are you talking about? So part of it is going to be that we need to look at the implementation of this white paper when it becomes white paper. And part of it is also making sure that every peace official understand what the white paper is, etc. And although the process now is a consultation process, it's also part of making people aware that there is this process, and when it's finalized, they need to be aware of it. I think that the international best practice, I think we need to, we basically have done quite a lot of international research, and maybe we need to refer to it, because some of the things that people have raised, and one of the things that we've raised with researchers is that we haven't only looked at South African research, but we've also looked at international research, and it's important to do that. So we've looked at UN stuff, we've looked at USA Mullen Commission stuff, we've looked at some of the commissioners' conferences, because I think it's quite important to also listen to what some of the international peace agencies are saying and grappling with. For example, peace culture while things may be bad in South Africa, peace culture is an issue that these commissioners at these conferences are grappling with, and there's quite a lot of stuff that's been written on it. So I think we need to lift out some of those things and put them into the green paper. I don't know if Bookie's a view or...
Thank you, Secretary. I think the Secretary has covered everything. I just want to speak about referencing and the international best practice. We've done extensive research on international best practice. We've had attention about where to reference, source these things. And we advised by the reference group that in a white paper you do not source and you do not use price tags at all, because they become dated after a while. So maybe you can give us guidance. This is what we were advised by the reference group as well, because it has come back in one or two public submissions as well on how to reference. I think, yeah, the research has covered everything else, so fine. Thanks.
Anything from you also? Okay. Can I just say, I think, you know, if you look at the recruitment and you look at the fact that, as the Honourable George said, a trick certificate, no criminal record. Our conviction rate for murder is less than 10%. So you're running the fingerprint against the criminal record setter. The guy might have committed a crime. We need to look at something different. Should this fingerprint of an applicant not be run against wanted people as well? Should it not be run against every single database in terms of crime? The other thing is, if we talk about professionalizing, I mean, for me it's no wonder we've got people that commit crimes once they're in SAPS. I think race conviction is even lower. So are we surprised that we have 5 police officers that are up for rape charges in the last week? I might have done so even before they've entered SAPS. But because of our conviction rates, and because we run that against the criminal record center, the fingerprint, we might not know that we're convinced that we're recruiting somebody that is guilty of a crime. So maybe that is something you need to look at as well, in terms of recruitment. Should it not be run against your wanted list? Your suspect list. If we talk DNA, run it against the DNA suspect list. If you look at professionalizing South African police service, I think, you know, I don't want to do this, but I am going to do this. Look at what's happening at the CFR. The suspension of the 2 aides, CFR. If you talk about professionalizing the South African police service, is it not, should not put in policy that hostile audits be done from time to time, especially for senior managers? Especially for senior managers. Yeah, Beerbrug, when we visited Beerbrug, there was an ordinary police officer who had 5 vehicles, 3 vehicles, 5, I can't remember. Now that in itself should raise suspicion with the station commander. How is it possible that the constable have 3 new vehicles within 2 weeks? Should discipline against police officers, I'm talking measurements of management now, should discipline at your station, crime at your station by police officers, misconduct by police officers, should that also not be reflected in the performance agreement of the station commander? Because then he's command and controlling his resources, his human resources. The other thing that I think the paper is very silent on, and it comes back to my whole issue of organogram, and I think the absence of it is because it's difficult. But that's not an excuse. It should be, we should address it. Is this whole issue of cluster commanders? Do we want them? If we want them, what are their duties? Our experience of them is an extremely negative experience. It's an extremely negative experience. Where the worst station that we visited in Limpopo was a cluster station. The cluster commander was sitting at that station. So what is the role of this person who often wears the rank of a general or a brigadier at the least? What is the purpose of that person? And I think in that way, if we talk organogram, we're saying what should be the minimum permanently? What is the relationship of that with the province? And what is the relationship of that with the station at station level? And I think there we need to clarify. I hear what you say in terms of not putting everything in the green paper, and we agree with you, but I think part of the problem is that let's then summarize those issues that we say will be addressed through policy and put it in the paper and say corruption is going to be addressed through the policy development. This is going to be addressed through policy development. The Honourable Dorcher's point about force will be addressed through policy document. So that people can keep track, society can keep track, us can keep track about it. You yourself can see what is outstanding, what still needs to be done, such is clear on it as well. I'm very worried that, and as you have answered my question around the university issue. Yeah, I'm very, the university issue. No, I said, I gather that you guys are caught by surprise as well, because you talk about this year. This, for me, is not something that should be announced by management. It's a policy issue. It's a policy, it's a major policy shift that comes from away. And I think here's your opportunity as well. Put in the green paper where policy comes from. Put it in the green paper where policy comes from. Put it in the green paper where operation comes from. Put it in the green paper. You know, in this province, the provincial commissioner has made domestic violence register, adherence to domestic violence register, part of the performance agreements of the station commanders. Now, I can tell you now, we're going to see an increase in domestic violence in this province. And it's going to be shut down by the national management. In fact, while he should be praised for that, because for the first time it's now being taken seriously, it's a true reflection of what is actually happening there. And for that reason I'm saying we need to be clear about what it is. Members, anything else? Honourable Bill Barnett, question, Honourable?
Yeah, I'm just about done. We've spoken a lot about corruption and criminality on the part of SAPS members and how it's eating away public confidence. Now, see, you know, we've been through looking extensively at the type of person that should be brought in and the psychometric testing and all that. But I don't see, or I didn't see, perhaps I missed it, but the concrete steps to address criminality that's already within. Now, when Gareth Newham sits in this committee and tells us there are thousands of SAPS members with criminal records, I mean, I nearly pass out. But we do hear, and I hear on a regular basis, that you have SAPS members going straight from the station to court, and if necessary, right down to the cells, never suspended.
I could say suspend them, they go, treat them exactly the same way they did the ICD. So you have a person who's up for rape or worse, stole the firearm. Still they literally use the SATS vehicle to go to court. So that is a huge issue. And, you know, the fact that you have SATS friends with criminal records, to me, it's an oxymoron. How can you have a cop with a criminal record? It's just, I thought he was smoking his socks. That's just unbelievable. But it's absolutely true. We've had police provincial commissioners in this committee saying there was a guy, grievous bodily harm, nearly beat a guy to death. He paid in cash, the fine, whatever, $40,000, never missed a day at work. This is how we get rid of it. So that really has to be addressed in a major way. You'll never get the country to accept the SATS members openly, run to them for help instead of running away from them until that's sorted out. Also, I just wanted to mention, you said this has been, your provincial here has been widely advertised, etc. I immediately contacted my leader in KZN, and he's on the Safety and Security Committee, and he never heard. So it's not being at the provincial committees, perhaps, or certain individuals are being told and keeping it secret. I know what's happening, but it's not working, just to mention it. And also, I also have to agree with the chair that's mentioned of this university, that you don't know. I mean, I've spoken to people immediately. I was on the phone speaking to people about how one sets up a university. What was the Ministry of Higher Education even consulted? I mean, there are laws, rules, regulations, boards. Setting up universities is a multi-billion rand exercise, and it's blithely announced in the papers. I was absolutely gobsmacked. Can't be.
Chair, I just want to repeat or emphasize what has been said by all of us here. That I think, one, it's going to be very important, and when you do this strategy, it must help us. We are soon going to be dealing with the South African Police Service Act. So it must be able to help us to, because I think after that Police Act, we must be able to position the police in this country. This is where the police is going to stand. You see, also there's something I forgot, when the role of the LECs. You talked about it, but you see, that's another very, very, you see, if you look at the Constitution, the provincial commissioners got more powers than the MEC. But the MEC has got the responsibility in terms of policy and other things in the province. And sometimes I've been worried. I'm not saying I'm right, but I think it's going to be very good if you can look at how do you balance. Because as things stand now, the provincial commission can take this home and say, and report to the national commissioner. So there is no clear balance between the role of the MEC and the provincial commissioner. I think we talked about this some years ago. I think something which you, especially when dealing with this police issues, how do you make sure that you look, if you believe, because even then when we were discussing, we were not agreed, if you believe that the present setup is correct, put something so that some of the arguments that emerged at that time are dealt with once and for all.
You know, Chairperson, I want to emphasize the point that you have raised about the organogram. Why I'm talking about organogram? In these 5 years, we had run about 4 or 5 deputies. Some of those deputies, we don't even know where they come from. They just pitch up as deputies. You never know where they were recruited, how they were recruited, how did they become deputies, and so on and so forth. That's why we had the problem of one of them, which I won't mention the name, by the way. Why I'm talking like that, Chairperson, is because there is a linkage between the National Development Plan and the organogram. That is why when we were talking, I said the top brass. Because if the top brass is agreed by Parliament, nobody must change it. Nobody must change it. Because people change their top brass because they want to appoint this owner against so-and-so. It doesn't matter that she's good or bad. They appoint so-and-so against so-and-so. The infighting
make other people lose the position and others qualified to have position when they are not supposed to be in those positions. You end up not knowing exactly who has what. We were sitting in one of the budget committee. We were dealing with the budget of the subs. We were talking about the human resource the section. In former time, the head of the human resource person was on pension. Before we finished the budget, she was on pension. And we didn't understand what's going on. The new person is coming. And she said, doesn't know what we're talking about. That's the thing I'm talking about. Please, the organogram is very important and it must be stipulated that it only be changed by Parliament and it must be approved and changed by Parliament, not by anybody else. It can be any commissioner who likes anybody, but it can't change the organogram. Thank you.
No, from my side, one thing two things that I think are still outstanding. I just want to respond to what the Honourable William George raised. The question around the MECs can also be whether they should be MECs. I think it's a broader question than what their role and responsibilities is, because it is a national competency. And, you know, that's part of, besides the point, and the provincial commissioners are absolutely in their right to report to the national commission, and that's where their reporting line lies. But two things that I think that you touch on, but you're not clear about it. The one is the police board. I think you have the ideal opportunity to spell out how this board is going to be appointed. We know it's by the minister, but to give detail about it and what the functions of that board is going to be. And then the second one is... And I know it's not an easy matter either, but it's something that the National Development Plan touches on. I want to expand it a bit, the appointment of the National Commissioner, but also the appointment of provincial commissioners. The fact of the matter is the National Development Plan was adopted by Parliament. It's a 20-year vision for the country, and we need to address that. And if you come back to us with saying X, Y, Z, and you motivate it properly, fine. But if it's not motivated properly, we also bound it by the National Development Plan. Is there anything else for members? Please, I want to see before I... Anything else needs to be input, I want to try and summarise for us, if it's possible. Such a short meeting, it's shocking. Yeah. Then I'll give them an opportunity to answer, waiting for the detail, but we must make sure that all the detail is there. Is there anything else that members feel before I give an opportunity for the secretary and the team to respond, before we then summarise as well? Nothing. Okay.
Yeah, I think that we already raised at the beginning of the paper that we need to clarify more on the National Peace Board. I think the issue for us is what will go into the act and what will go into the policy. So even when it comes to the organogram, if you're talking about it being written in law, then it needs to be in the Act, which is being reviewed and made clear in the Act. So I think one of the issues we need to identify, so even for us, the issue of the appointment process would be something that would be legislated in terms of the Act. But we're also saying that the board must set the criteria, etc., around that. I think just on the Honourable Member Colabano's issue of criminality, the law is clear. If a criminal record is a requisite to enter, it remains a requisite of your service. And we've clarified this internationally, so that if you have, if a requirement to be a member of the Home Complete Service is that you do not have a criminal record, then it remains a term, a condition of service throughout your term. It isn't just something that you have to comply with at recruitment and later on it falls away. So I think that the issue of criminality is a question again. Like I said, there's some issues which they're there. You know, we had issues where we dealt with things where the procedures, the national standing instructions, we can't recommend anything more except implement on some of the issues. So I think some of the issues are about making sure that we implement these things. And criminality is one of them. It's very clear in terms of the law. I mean, even if you went to court, what judge would say to you, you can have a criminal operating in that. The worst thing they would do is say, pay them a year's salary because you regularly dismiss them, but I don't doubt they would ask you to bring them back into that. So for us, the issue of criminality is very clear. However, we're also saying that issues of corruption and criminality can be not properly identified and not properly dealt with if there is a if you don't deal with issues of governance and leadership, etc., etc. So you need to deal with the rotten apples, but as I said, with corruption, you also need to look at the systems that prevent it from happening and that those systems are working. And so far, that's the issue around criminality, that we don't have to. The law's there. It's in the SAPS Act, and I doubt very much Parliament would agree to change that SAPS Act when we review it, to change the criminality.
That is what I thought. But we had a provincial commissioner sit here and say, no, the SAPS Act says if they're offered the option of a fine, we can't get rid of them. And he was desperate to kick this guy out. So you're saying it is an act. I haven't read it recently.
No, it's quite correct. It is in the Act that the National Commissioner has got discretion. In terms of this. And that is a problem that we need to get out of the Act.
Yeah.
We need to get that out of the Act. It should come out of the Act. And I mean, we can, even from the, yeah, we can. I just want to say we can make an amendment tomorrow if necessary on the issue from a committee side.
Chair, let everybody hold the National Commission accountable in the part that delegation, that authority was delegated down. So you had provincial commissioners, etc., making decisions. Let everybody hold the one person responsible for it. It's a system problem that needs to be addressed, as far as we're concerned. And that is clear.
Okay. Just one last remark from my side before I summarise this, and members must please not leave, because we've still got business to deal with. Intelligence. We talk about intelligence-driven police. But we all know, as we sit here, that we don't have an intelligence legislation governing such intelligence. And I think the Green Paper is too silent on intelligence as well. No, Victoria, don't shake your head at me. That's your opportunity, it's my opportunity. The fact of the matter is, this is one of the issues where you could say clearly that we need to have policy, etc., etc. There's lacking. It's not clear in India, and I heard quite clear Mark saying, and I agree with him, intelligence-driven policing. But we sit in a situation of the 1,100, 800 of them, their clearance are not valid, all lapsed, etc. So we need to be specific. If we want to have intelligence-driven policing as a policy, then as much as we're giving attention to the detectors in the Green Paper, we then need to give attention to the intelligence part of police as well. And the other issue that I think you are silent on, although you refer to it some extent, is the international obligation of SAPS. How far do we want to extend SAPS in terms of international obligations? I mean, the mere fact that there are people in Sudan and that it was not politically cleared. If the defence sends people outside of this country, it's got to come to Parliament, even if it's after the fact. It's got to come to Parliament, and Parliament must agree to it. And I think there we also need to look at it, because it's taking the resource. I'm not saying it shouldn't be there, but let's have a position on how do we manage that part of it. Members, I want to summarise this meeting of ours. And what I'm saying now is not excluding anything else that members have raised throughout the day. But we believe that the Green Paper should help to introduce standard policing and set out a clear and coherent architecture for the country's policing system and not be apologetic about it. It should clearly articulate a vision for police. We also agree with comments that you've received before that the basic structure of the paper should be reconsidered to ensure that historical background is separated from forward-looking policy proposals. All sections should be clearly separated description from concrete and forward-looking policies. There should be visible differentiation so that readers of the paper have a clear sense as to what is being proposed. How are you going to do it? you say that you were advised not to do it, but I think use it then at least in your argument, where you policy pronouncements and statements need to be informed by empirical research. Now, I know you have done it, but it's not reflected. And I mean, even if you're not referring, but you can at least say following best practice, etc., etc. Assumptions and propositions need to be supported by evidence and need to be clearly articulated. Policy responses need to be proactive and not reactive. Policies need not be public formulated in reaction to major incidents or crises or in response to a major decline in public confidence in the police, but should instead be articulated after careful consideration of where policing should go in South Africa. The Green Paper should provide more detail and add value to policy proposals contained in the National Development Plan, particularly around the Police Board and our innovative proposals. Annual Gathram should be included, highlighting structural changes which are proposed and the relationship between the structures. There is a need to establish strong partnership with other relevant stakeholders, such as universities and research organizations, for knowledge transfer in future. I'm not talking about the Green Paper itself. There is a need to develop advanced courses on policing for police management. We agree on that. The consultative process, and you've addressed this issue already by extending it, needs to create more time and space for broader public participation. There is a need to think deeply and very strategically about issues around usage of military ranks, police brutality, and the creation of a single police service. When finalising the Green Paper, its drafters should take the following into consideration: international best practice, statistical research, and clear demarcation of the roles of specialised units. I think in summary, that's basically the issues that was raised by the committee, and if you could take that into consideration, we would clearly appreciate it. We thank you for briefing us. We're looking forward to the final product. We're looking forward to the SAPS Act, especially in terms of the very pressing issues that I think needs to be addressed in that. I said to the Secretary in the previous engagement that the SAPS Act doesn't accept that the SAPS Act is not comprehensive at this point, but there are certain critical issues that I don't believe we can leave much longer. Things like the criminal records, like promotions, appointments, transfers, things like that we need to address as soon as possible, bringing it in line with the final constitution and not based on the interim constitution as it currently is. Members, I'm going to vacate the seat for a minute. Mobile was going to take over. Secretary is staying over. Remember, if I can just explain what happened. I'm not in the chair, I'm now explaining as a member. I'll explain as a member of the committee. When we elected the chairperson at the last meeting we've had, I indicated to the whip and to the committee secretary that the committee secretary should be chairing that session. But the two of them in their wisdom overruled me. I've since been proven right, and I got a call from committee section saying that we've got to redo this process. So that's basically what we're doing now. And Belle was chairing, so give her all these.
Good day, honourable members, department colleagues. I will now proceed to call for a nomination position of the chairperson. In terms of the rules of Parliament, Rule 129(1) of the National Assembly, it says that the nomination for the position of the chairperson should be facilitated by the committee secretary. And now I will proceed with the nomination. Are there any nominations?
Honourable.
I nominate Annelies van Wyk as the chairperson of the committee.
Is there any seconder for the nomination?
It's not that I agreed, I second the nomination.
Is there any objection for the to the nomination?
I propose closed nomination, sir.
Okay. But our members, you must ignore that I have to follow the process, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you don't want to read again.
I put the question that Honorable Van Wyk be chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Those who are in favor, please raise your hands. Those who are against, please raise your hand. Okay, Honorable Van Wyk has received the majority of the vote. Is declared chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Congratulations and please take your seat.
Women's my apologies for this. It's actually quite embarrassing. Must be the first person that gets elected twice. Members, we also have minutes to be dealt with today. Members have received minutes. Can I ask where you've gone through the minutes? Okay. Now what I would suggest then is that we leave them for tomorrow morning and that we deal with them tomorrow morning. Members, can I just info tomorrow morning's meeting will be where? B2-7. We will receive a presentation from the Information Technology section from the Department, Correctional Services, in terms of the implementation plan of the DNA. Immediately after that, we will continue with the act, the bill itself, and with our deliberations on the bill. 9:30. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.